You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 16th, 2020, and this is the last episode before we turn it into a Spelunky 2 fan cast.
Oh, yeah. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Abor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. And man, that conversation gets old real quick if you aren't up to date on the latest news. last week, we talked a little bit about the Xbox Series S, which had been announced, I believe, on like Sunday or Monday, right?
Yeah, we often... What do we do? I think they announced it, what, on Monday? We often record the podcast either on Monday or Tuesday.
Yes.
And it was something like a Monday announcement and then Tuesday and then Wednesday. Then what happened?
And then they announced the price of the actual Xbox One X and all of our predictions just right out the window.
I feel so, like we were okay, though, right? Like we didn't... What did we say? Did I say 600 for Sony or 600 for Microsoft?
I think you said 600 for Microsoft. Okay. We were a little high. We were a little high. The pricing comes in at what? Is it $499?
Yeah.
So $500 for the Xbox One X. And they announced
the Series X. Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry. correct. And they announced that hot on the heels of the Series S announcement.
Yeah.
I guess while... It's actually a little weird to me because it felt like it was kind of a...
It was
like
very little fanfare.
Yeah, very little fanfare. Yeah. It felt kind of like an afterthought. There was no, you know, large press conference or a planned live stream like there will be this Wednesday when this podcast is once again dated in just 24 hours.
Make stupid predictions, though. That's fun, at least.
That's true, yes. Because by the time you are listening to this, Sony will have had another press conference on September 16th, the Wednesday that this is likely to come out.
Yeah.
That's an interesting kind of tidbit. I think that everyone's assumption is that they will be unveiling the pricing and I guess the final sort of launch slate or hype of games that they'll be releasing for the PlayStation 5. That's not confirmed. There's a good chance that they don't do that and they continue to hold out. And maybe this was always planned. But to me, this feels like their attempt, and maybe they knew about this coming down the pipeline, and so it was planned ahead of time. Not to saying that this is a frantic decision, but it does feel like a decision meant to reclaim the conversation following Microsoft's announcement.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at this point, especially, well, one, I think it is very strange that the Xbox stuff passed by with such little fanfare, and it really tells you a little bit more about what they're leading with, you know, like it doesn't seem like they're leading with the big one. It seems like they're leading with the cheap one and just kind of putting that out there for other people. If you really want the, you know, native 4K or whatever.
Do you think that makes sense, though? Like from my perspective, or even conversations that we've had earlier in the year about these two consoles, you are releasing a console in the middle of a major pandemic where a lot of people's livelihoods are at risk, if not already struggling due to layoffs.
Yep.
There's a lot of economic concern that, you know, spending a whole lot on a new console might not be justifiable in that particular economy. And paying by month and doing something that's a bit more service-based does actually make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
We know that there's not a huge, you know, within the first couple months of a new console being out, it's really only those sort of core buyers that are going to be picking it up. A lot of people will wait. They'll wait for the holidays. They'll wait to pick it up until the following year. And there's a game or a system seller for them, right?
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense, I think, in my book, to really push the cheaper model as this is the lead SKU for this fiscal, at least. Mm-hmm. And then figure, well, next year, that's when we'll really be pushing the actual sort of next gen console side.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. And just in terms of reading what people may or may not be able to spend based off of their finances. I also think, though, that it would have made a lot more sense to lead with the cheaper one if Halo was still a launch title. Because yes. then it's yeah. like, check this out. It's your Halo machine. It doesn't even matter that it's not as powerful as the PS5, because guess what? It got that Halo. It you know, like, Halo.
Yeah.
I mean, it
we
just...
even put a ring in the center of the console.
There's so a Halo ring. I mean, it just seems like it would have made a lot more sense if there was any compelling first party title that would have justified it, because then it's like, you know, fair enough. Like, I don't, you know, I'm not going to get the PlayStation, the most powerful console out there, but I'm at least going to get Gears of War or Halo or yep. whatever, you know, Forza something.
Yep.
And I don't think there's, I mean, am I wrong? Is there something coming out that I am forgetting about? Like, I really don't think there is.
No, I think you're totally right.
Yeah. So anyway, it still makes sense, but I think it would have made a lot more sense when they were still confident that Halo was going to launch.
Correct, totally. So in addition, we also saw there was another leak, I guess, of sorts. I think it's kind of sus, but we'll talk a little bit about how likely this is going to be. But someone took a photograph of a Spanish retailing website that listed two consoles codenamed Aurea and Enigma. And there's
it's actually the Riddler. That was Enigma hacking the system.
Yes. There are some suspicions that these are the codenames for the PlayStation 5, right. the sort of full model, and then the discless cheaper model.
Yeah.
And they have them listed out. I think it's what, $499 and $399 each. Is that right?
Something like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially similar price ranges. Do you think that if this is the case, Sony will similarly lean on their cheaper model versus their higher system seller? Or do you think the price points are close enough where one is just sort of a discless version, but you're good to go? Yeah. They're functionally the same console.
I mean, I think they've already confirmed that they are the same console, like in terms of
all just, the inside bits.
Yeah, pure, yeah. exactly. In terms of CPU, GPU stuff, I think it really is the... But I think that if you're Sony, you have been pushed into a situation where Microsoft has led with an aggressive price, and now you might have to discount that discless version even more, you know, where it's like, I'm sure these things cost more than $400 to make, but if you even want to be in the ballpark of the 300 Series S thing, then you need to take a bit more of a bath on it to, you know, to lure people into that price point versus the $500 one, which to me, like, I don't, and now, like, that Microsoft has announced its $500 thing, I actually don't think, I mean, how could Sony price it higher, you know? Like, that'd be a pretty tall order to, like, price it at $600 when Xbox has already had a $500 and a $300 option.
The game of chicken, Microsoft has swerved, and now Sony also has to swerve now.
It's like Microsoft has swerved, and they swerved revealing a brick wall. you know, that, like, that now Sony's like, uh-oh.
That's interesting. So looking at, again, we're just assuming at this point that that is the pricing, and let's just go for it.
Yeah.
Looking at the prices, what would you be most likely to buy? I mean, I think that $399 tag is quite alluring from the perspective of you get all of the next-gen stuff, but you're not at the same price point that the Xbox or Sony's higher-end model is, but you also get more than the cheaper model of the Series S.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's for people in our position that are, I don't even know what our marketing term is anymore, but like enthusiast video game players that are willing to spend a bit more money on video games than perhaps the average player.
Yeah. If you are likely to own a video game music album on vinyl, this is the console for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's some correlational things where it's like, do you have approximately 600 podcasts of video game stuff? Then you will probably order the expensive one, you know?
Yes.
So I think there's, I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking.
What you're saying.
I mean, I think for me personally, how I play games, I would probably get the disc drive, because I'm also thinking about it in terms of future proofing for when I get a new TV, because then I could have a 4K, disc blue, you know, 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray player. But it's a true luxury, you know. Like, it would be totally fine to get the discless version, because every single game is digital, and we buy so many of our games digital anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, well, yeah, it's just crazy because the other thing too is like, I was thinking about the new video cards the other day. Have you like done any reading about that stuff?
Yeah, I was actually just fantasizing the other day about that. It's wild to me because the newer models. So right now I have a GTX 1080 Ti in my PC, which is one graphics card generation older than what's currently on the market.
But that's like the workhorse. Like the 1080, the 10 series has been like, seemingly a legendarily applicable and future proof type of card to have, you know?
I mean, most games I'm playing on my PC, well, they're like random little indie games that I have no justification for a card of this value, but it runs butter smooth and it works great.
Yeah.
The jump in power between this and the 30 series and even like the 3080 or the 30 90 super is so above and beyond.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. But the price point is bonkers because I think the 3070 is sitting at, I think, $700, maybe $600.
Yeah, something like that.
And then the 3080 is like $1,500.
Right.
It's just like a massive jump. Knowing that I can jump to that 3070, though, it's very tempting. I mean, I might just upgrade my PC also, but then, I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. Like, I haven't upgraded my PC for, I've put in new video cards here and there, but I'm not even on the 10 series. Like, I'm running like a 980 inside, which is, and honestly, like, I feel like graphics cards starting around the 900 series have gotten pretty good in terms of like being able to scale, especially if you're only pushing 1080, if you're not, like, I'm not playing 4K games on PC, so it's fine.
Right.
But I'm at the point now where, I mean, the 3070 does look pretty, again, for enthusiasts like ourselves, like we are willing to spend $600 on a video card, but like, that also means I need to upgrade my CPU, which also means I probably need to upgrade my motherboard. So like that quickly turns into like a $1,000 plus prospect,
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And for that mount, you can buy three Xbox Series S's and have $100
and then stack
left
them up.
Over. And stack them up and have triple the processing power, all the teraflops and ray traces.
But I mean, there is something to be said for like, it seems like the ray tracing stuff and like these cards are meant to like showcase that stuff. So
for sure,
for folks like us, it seems like that the 30 series seems like a pretty alluring thing in addition to all of these consoles that are coming out.
I mean, the Titan ones are above, they're just beyond the pale. Cause it's why would you even bother having an 8K monitor for your PC anyway? your eyes are not good enough to appreciate the value there.
You gotta upgrade your eyes to
Once we upgrade our eyes, then we're getting to the next level. We're not just talking about tech today, though. We also wanted to talk a little bit about some games that we were playing. Shall we transition over to
About a couple games, and then I also, because we made some, so our predictions for the PlayStation are basically now much more boring, which is like probably 500. It's like 400 and 500 are probably what it's going to happen, so it'll be interesting to see. And then I think we should probably wrap with a couple of predictions on Spelunky 2, since we're having to record this just less than 12 hours away from Spelunky time.
I mean, is it technically available now? Because it's midnight East Coast time?
Oh, fuck. Hold. One moment, please.
Please hold while I download Spelunky and get distracted.
I'll just splice in the elevator music here. La, 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 la. We'll come back having played 12 hours of Spelunky 2.
Oh my God, I wish.
Anyway, but we've been playing a couple extra games to like tide us over. Why don't you start with Spiritfarer? Because I haven't started this, but I've been wanting to play it for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, so this is a game from, I think they're called Thunder Lotus out of Montreal. It's a small independent studio. This was announced at, I think, E3 last year. And I think we talked about it actually on the podcast because it looked like a very visually arresting, gorgeous looking, so almost sort of comic book cartoon style aesthetic. Yeah. And I missed this because technically this came out 3 weeks ago at the end of August, but I knew I wanted to play it, and I had finished playing Ghost of Tsushima, so I was looking for something new, and this popped up on my feed, and I really enjoy this game. I think it's fantastic. I think it's made with a lot of care and tact. I mean, this is functionally a sort of house or farm management game akin to something like Animal Crossing, right? Right. There's fishing, there's gardening, you have to find and get resources to build your houses, and you have to play some mini games to get those. You have to mine resources, you have to cut down trees, you have to convert those trees into planks of wood that you can then use to build. You can weave fabric and wool into thread and weave that thread into fabric, which you can then use to build more structures, right? So it follows a lot of that same sort of life sim type of game experience, and it brings with it that same level of comfort and hominess that you would find in Animal Crossing. However, layered on top of that is this story that is basically about how we die and how our loved ones die and how we say goodbye to those we love. The basic premise is that you are the new spirit farer. Your job is to basically escort lost souls to the afterlife. Right. And a lot of the people that come onto your boats and they'll stay a while and you build them houses and whatnot are people that the main character of Stella knows in her real life. And so you have these sort of, you know, like her uncle is on the boat or one of her good friends growing up is on the boat. You know, at one point there's like an old lady on your boat as well. And like there's, you know, a variety of different personalities come onto your ship and they have their own wants and their own desires and you provide them food and you learn about their past. You learn about some of the things that at the end of their life they're focused on or thinking about. You know, for some of them, it's like a husband who died a long time ago. Some of it's like a spouse that died a long time ago. But the way that that spouse sort of helped them deal with, you know, something that could be a metaphor for depression or substance abuse.
Right.
Or, you know, your uncle thinks about his kids a lot. Right. And the backdrop of all of this is them dying. But then on top of that is also all of the sort of like comfort of something like Animal Crossing. And so it mixes these two emotions together to make the argument and the thesis that like they should be, right? Like that the idea of sort of building a home, of finding comfort, of being with loved ones, and death is a part of that. And it's a part of that in your every day-to-day life, right? Like as you live with others, like that is the deal that we've made without choosing in order to live your life. And that integrates that really nicely into the game. And by the time that you say goodbye to each of them, these characters that you've been with for a little while on your boat, do you sort of have this lasting impression on the character? Hmm. I am a good chunk of the way in. It's actually a pretty long game. This is like a $30 game, so it's a, you know, it's a good classic double A title. And I'm probably like 15 hours in.
Is there a set end to the game, or is it like a forever thing, like Animal Crossing?
I think there is, because when I delivered my first soul, like a big scary owl thing was like, I'm gonna see you soon or whatever, and I haven't seen them yet. So
oh boy.
I assume there is an end. I think that there's a fixed number of personalities that will join your ship.
Okay.
I have sent off to the afterlife 4 of them.
Okay.
And I have another 4 on my boat, and there's probably at least one more. I know for a fact there's at least one more spirit who's not yet on my boat.
Right.
So I'm maybe even, you know, only halfway through the game, and I assume that there's an end once you sort of shuttle everyone else off.
Right.
I strongly suspect the end is the same end that we all have, which is you will die.
Right. But if you are like, if you are playing as the character that takes on this like Charon, like, you know.
That is the name of the previous spiritfarer.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. So, like, but doesn't that suggest that you might already be dead, or is Charon not actually dead?
So, I think the illusion is that you are really dead, and the game sort of mixes both, because part of it is that the spirits that are on the islands, you get the sense that they're already dead, and that your job is to basically take them that final way.
Okay. Okay.
But in many ways, the things that they talk about to you, especially as they approach them dying, are as though they're still alive and they're dying now, right? And I don't know whether or not that's because their sort of spirits are thinking about their life and what they sort of that whole experience was, or if we're just sort of meant to follow the metaphor only so far that we get that they're dying. But you know, there's a character that that. The one that is sort of dealing with depression or dealing with this sort of like illness, right? Or there's another one that's like this old lady that sort of has dementia, and she confuses you for her daughter at one point, right? And you have to sort of like pretend to be her daughter and then take her there. that to me feels like the game is sitting with the idea of being with people in their final moments, right?
Right.
That you're there with people that, you know, are dying of an illness and they know it and you are there to comfort them, or maybe they're old and they're losing their cognitive abilities, but you play a certain role.
Right.
Especially in American culture, where I think death is something that is seen as like really scary or like infectious, and people don't sit with the dead. They don't really spend time with the dead and the dying in American culture all that much. This feels like a thesis against that in those things, in a way that is, I think, is important above and beyond just you're taking the spirits to the final step of it. Like, you are with them through that process.
Right. It's not, you're not just, it's not just like a quick shuttle. Like, you're learning about them on the way.
I will say, I think that the game will probably be boring to a lot of people. There are frequent asks that amount to essentially fetch quests. But I think if you take this game as it's intended, at a very slow pace, to sort of just experience the sort of comfort that you might get from playing something like Animal Crossing, I think there's a lot to really like here, and there's a lot to appreciate from people that chose to take a subject matter that is sensitive and emotional and really think it through and apply it to the world that they've built and the mechanics that they're using. It, like, nothing feels dissonant with one another, right? It feels like it's genuinely thought through, to the point where, you know, when someone is gone and you've carried them off, you can still play the mini games that were associated with them, and their you know, their house is there, and, like, you know, just because someone is gone doesn't mean you don't think about them or they're not a part of your life,
or they haven't made an impact on the ship/house or whatever that you built. You know,
yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you can't salvage it. Like, once their home is there, you can't, like, dismantle it right away, because it's not just a utility thing, right? Like, there's a presence there, then they cannot leave you. And I think that message built into the message of something that's normally like Animal Crossing adds a lot of evocative feelings and really interesting ideas that I just found completely gone in something like Animal Crossing, which is really just about maximizing the benefits so you can build your luxury house, right? And not
Animal Crossing was that raw capitalism.
Yeah, it's like raw, exactly. And not those who die along the way.
Not human culture.
I think for people listening to this podcast, I think Spiritfarer is very good, and I would strongly recommend people give it a shot.
Yeah. That's cool. I mean, it's definitely on my list of things to get to before the end of the year, because it seems like it's gotten a fair amount of momentum kind of quietly.
How about you? You've been playing something also that I've missed.
Yeah, I've been playing a game called The Last Campfire. I've also been continuing to play Super Mario, Paper Mario
3D, 4D.
The Origami King.
Yes.
I'm continuing to play it. That game has great music, but I'll say more about that, you know, maybe when I finish the game. I'm probably like halfway through. But anyway, I've been playing a game called The Last Campfire.
And when did this come out? Was this also recent?
Yeah, it was, I think it was the end of August.
Okay.
And weirdly, it is put out by Hello Games of No Man's Sky infamy.
Yeah. Well, now just famey, I guess.
Yeah, I guess now they've you know, good on them. They really stuck with it. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, this is the first game after No Man's Sky, weirdly enough.
Is it about their trauma? Because I imagine there's just a lot of references to
there's a metaphor going on here. Like, I was looking for games to play with Sam, because we're both of us are out here in the West Coast, and we are on day 30, I think, of like hazardous air conditions.
Yeah.
So we've just been stuck inside. And so Sam's video game education has started, because there's literally nothing else to do.
We knew this day would come, but not like this.
God. Yeah, not like this. So I was looking for games that I wanted to play, but also that I didn't talk about this on the podcast, but I played A Short Hike. Did you ever play that game?
Oh, I have not. No, I missed that one.
It's very good. I mean, it's not, it came out maybe last year, I think. Yeah, I think actually it's just a 2019 game. But so I've been looking for games that are kind of exploration based, but aren't super scary or violent. And this one seemed to fit the bill. And it's what it is a it's essentially a puzzle slash adventure game where it's a third person kind of overview three-dimensional world where you're playing as this little creature called Ember, who gets separated from the rest of his group going on some sort of exploratory expedition and now is wandering through this kind of mysterious forest and set of caves and such to get back to the people that he got separated. Actually, I think it's a they, which is, was interesting. The people that Ember, they got separated from. And along the way, you find others that have gotten lost in the forest and you're able to help them kind of get back to the campfire area. There's some pretty strong there's some pretty strong Journey-esque vibes to it.
The sort of robes that they're wearing look reminiscent of the Journey robes.
Well, and also those little creatures are, it seems like something has happened in this environment. You know, there have been creatures that have gotten lost in the fire or in the forest, and around the campfire, there's this kind of ghost that helps direct you towards people that may be lost, and you solve puzzles to basically free them. What are they called? I think they're called the Forlorn or something like that. Like that's the people who are lost in the woods. And so, but what the puzzles actually are more traditional adventure gamey like puzzles. A lot of them have to do with, you know, environmental things where it's like, I need to get this torch from one side of this bridge to the other, but every time I walk across the bridge, some wind gust blows it out. So I need to figure out a way around it. Or, you know, this is what essentially amounts to like a slide puzzle that I need to figure out in order to get across this bridge and figure things out like that. Not super sophisticated puzzles, but ones that I feel like are there to kind of push you through the story, which is kind of cool. It kind of reminded me of your description of Spiritfarer, because it is this game that could be a walking simulator, but they put puzzles in it that you actually have to think about a little bit more. So, but not so much that, like, it's not like The Witness, you know, like you're never going to reach a place where it's like, I have no clue how to do this.
Yeah.
It's more just like, this is a medium level mental challenge to kind of break up the story that they're trying to tell.
Yeah. It looks gorgeous. I mean, it actually has a somewhat similar aesthetic to Spiritfarer.
Yeah. There is kind of a, you know, this is like a three-dimensional version of that, kind of painterly in a way. Yeah. And Sam's review so far is Ember is cute and he was a little freaked out because it's kind of spoopy in the beginning, you know, like you get separated from the other things and, you know, the forest is a little creepy. And then he got frustrated that I was taking too long trying to figure out a slide puzzle, and wanted me to move on. And I was like, you know what? Fair enough.
The armchair critic is already at it. It's like, yeah, this puzzle's taking too long. Scott, move on.
But I mean, it's also kind of like a classic, like, you know, you meet this huge kind of spirit frog in the forest and, you know, it's clear that the frog is hungry. And then a few screens later, you find this big worm and a broken net. And you're like, aha, I could use this worm and net to catch a fish, to feed the frog, to do the thing. Like, there's a certain amount of, you know, classic adventure game logic that is kind of comforting to play in this context, because you're also getting a cool story that is coming along with it.
And you're liking it so far?
I am liking it so far. I'm pretty early in, I feel like, but they also are doing a neat thing where they're kind of gating the areas of the world based off of how many of the Forlorn you've found, but you don't need to find every single one to progress. So if you do run into a puzzle that's too difficult, you're not 100% blocked when you get there.
Yeah. These types of games are always interesting to me because it's from a studio that is very small, and they made a game that was fucking massive.
Yeah.
And they're still operating, right? Like,
a live game, effectively. No Man's Sky
is a live brand now, and so they have a crew that's always churning something out. The Last Campfire, while it looks very high quality, it's hard not to escape this feeling as though this is their loving side project that they put together.
Yeah.
Because they were killing themselves on No Man's Sky.
Yeah.
And to me, that makes 100% of the time, that makes a more interesting game because it's made, even if it's not perfect. And oftentimes these types of games are not, because they are there's a small skeleton crew working on it on the side, and it takes years and years and years of development. I think they do tend to be more interesting because they're made with that degree of like care and attentiveness, you know, because they love it. They want to spend time in it, you know?
Well, it's just so completely different from,
oh yeah.
I mean, if you think about their games, like Hello Games is crazy. Like they made the, they made No Man's Sky, of course, which is, you know, one of the most audacious recent games of recent memory. And then before that, though, they made three Joe Danger games.
Oh, and man, then, I always forget that.
And then they made this game. So they're kind of all over the place in a weird kind of cool way. Like, I almost want to root for them to be like, oh, okay, these are... It's just weird to have games. Maybe something, maybe a similar thing is like Double Fine or something. Like, people that just make games that are highly different from one another.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of cool that you get that level of variety from a single studio.
I mean, keep it fresh. I like it. I think I'm probably going to check this game out.
Yeah, I liked it. And I'll see how it winds up. It might be one of those things where it takes me a little while because, again, I'm trying to like, trying to keep people sane in here with video games.
Yes, that's very, very true. Well, also Spelunky comes out tomorrow. So where are you going to find the time?
Man. I mean, where am I going to find the time for anything? Like work, you know, it's just, we'll just be spelunking. Like that's the last you'll ever see of us.
If you can't have good air quality above ground, go below ground.
That's true. Know? Smoke can't get below ground.
Can't smoke. Hey, it's just simple. That's simple just science. Physics.
Oh, man. So Spelunky prediction. How do you think there will be like referential things in Spelunky? Like, do you think we'll fight Yama at some point?
Ooh, good question. 100%. I would be shocked if that boss was not in this game somewhere.
Right.
You know? Like, if some secret convoluted events, you find Yama 2.0, he's, like, trapped, you know, and is, like, half robot or whatever. For sure. 100%.
Do you think we will secretly figure out that all of those cavemen that you slaughter throughout Spelunky have,
are like sentient?
Yeah, exactly. A secret like a underground society. Yeah.
That's so sad. The crazy thing about Spelunky 2 is that the first Spelunky, people were discovering new things about it. I was discovering new things about it years after it came out.
Oh, yeah.
The potential depth of Spelunky 2 is unparalleled. And to know that there might be things in here, like anything can be in here. Who knows? You know? Anything could be in this game because so much was in the last one that I didn't expect, you know?
It's weird to think that... Well, it's already weird to have a follow-up to something like Spelunky, but it's also then weird to think about if this game is even anything close to the first game, we could be looking at the better part of a decade of people figuring out stuff about this game.
Yes, absolutely.
It's so crazy.
Like, honestly, I cannot wait. And I fully expect to be watching live streams all day tomorrow of people playing Spelunky. And all this weekend. Well, in between playing Spelunky myself. So I am very, very excited. Easily our most anticipated game of the year.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah. All right. Well, that killed some time before Spelunky is out. I'll sit here and keep refreshing the page.
Yeah.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. Come on down, bring your friends. You know, we have a lot of old, like, Spelunky YouTube videos you could probably find up there. That's kind of fun to watch. We have, some of the best co-op moments of my life getting killed by Scott with the shotgun. Shotgun Bros, baby. Shotgun Bros for life.
Man.
That will be my Spelunky 2 tattoo. It'll be Shotgun Bros. A little dude carrying another little dude with a shotgun.
With like two crossed shotguns, like a coat of arms.
Hell yeah, dude. Like a sigil, a Spelunky sigil. If you're an artist out there, I will commission you to draw me that.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.